Our next presenter is Ryan Stewart from Virginia Tech University.
Thank you. So I think the previous speakers have done a good job of laying out some of the challenges with measuring water retention in both laboratory settings and in situ in the field. One of them we run into a lot is it's really time consuming. Our typical lab protocol is we go out, take samples from the field, take them back to the lab, and use something like a pressure pot system where it can take 2 to 3 months to get, you know, a -5 bar reading there for one plate of samples. Or recently we've been using the high prop. This is maybe 1 to 2 weeks for one sample. So again, we're talking long times if you want to start looking at spatial variation and water retention, things like that. Particularly in laboratory measurements, destructive measurement, so that's always a drawback. And there's been a lot of talk about hysteresis here. When you're measuring water retention in the field, it can be a challenge separating out main wetting and draining curves, scanning curves, all those things. Also heard some talk about representative volume, particularly again if you're taking a small scale core or even a repacked kind of sample, is that representative of field conditions, of field soils? And then also there's limitations in the measurement range for matrix potential or pressure head. So this is a nice chart that Decagon put together linking some of the different instruments and technologies we can use in the lab in the field and the range over which those instruments are valid. And there's no silver bullet to get all of it, at least not yet. One challenge that's kind of become obvious to me recently is uniqueness in your parameters if you're trying to fit a water retention model. So this would be an example of some water retention data collected on a pressure plate system, for example. Four points, you know, saturated or near saturated, 1/3 bar, 2/3 bar, 1 bar. And so we could take something like a Brooks and Corey model or the Van Genugten-Mollen model. You know, in this case, Brooks and Corey, we have a saturated water content, a residual water content, and then two fitting parameters, H sub B, oftentimes called the bubbling pressure, and this eta, which is related to the pore size distribution. And we could do something like a least squares regression and fit a curve to it, and maybe get a bubbling pressure of -13.7 and an eta parameter of 3.4. Of course, especially with these few data points, we could also get a satisfactory fit if we decrease that bubbling pressure, I guess increased by an order of magnitude, or changed it by a factor of 5 in the other direction. We can, in all these cases, low RMSE values, reasonable fits to our limited data set here. So there's really a challenge with uniqueness in these 2 and 3 or more parameter models if we're trying to fit to limited data. So I'm proposing that infiltration testing, and particularly instrument infiltration testing, may be a way to address at least a few of these challenges. And so why am I focusing on infiltration? I'd say one of the things is during an infiltration test, we have a range of water contents from, you know, very dry soils to saturated or near saturated soils in very short time scales and also in short spatial scales. And so we can sample, you know, from relatively dry conditions, PF3, 4, on, to near saturated conditions and gain information about everything in between, you know, this unsaturated hydraulic conductivity curve, and assuming there's a relationship with the retention curve, we can gain information during these infiltration tests. And so I'm going to focus on single ring infiltration tests here. This would be our ring. This would be a XY axis symmetric plane. And so in a typical single ring infiltration test, you have water under a low pressure, a low positive pressure, and water is infiltrating in both the lateral and in the vertical direction. And a lot of times people working with these kind of measurements, I think this lateral flow is kind of a bane, kind of a drawback, something to be dealt with. But I'm going to argue that there's a lot of information in this lateral wetting that we could potentially use to our advantage. And in particular, the soil sorptivity is something that's driving both early time vertical flow as well as any lateral flow here. And so there's a lot of models we could use for sorptivity. Partial to this one, I think it goes back to White and Soley, 1987, where the sorptivity is a function of some change in water content, some constant B, and then The two important terms, in my opinion, are the field saturated hydraulic conductivity and this lambda term, which is oftentimes referred to as the capillary length. And so what is this capillary length? Basically, it's an indication of those capillary forces acting through this transmission zone between the wetting front of the soil and the saturated bulb near our source. And so people have come up with models to try to predict this capillary length term, basically by integrating from some initial pressure head to zero the unsaturated hydraulic conductivity function and dividing it by a saturated hydraulic conductivity or a field saturated hydraulic conductivity. And so again, this is the Brooks and Corey model again, which I, just is illustrative due to its simplicity. We could take a function like this and in this case get an analytical solution where for soils that are initially very dry, our capillary length is just a function of our water retention parameters. Again, this bubbling pressure and this pore size distribution parameter, eta. And so we can take that relationship, we can plot, this is our bubbling pressure on the y-axis, this is that eta parameter on the x-axis, and each of these contour curves represents a value of lambda in centimeters. And so we can see something like a Columbia silt might have a capillary length of about 5 centimeters. Clays can have more than 3 meters for their capillary length. But this relationship also shows that because this eta parameter is constrained to be greater than 2, this capillary length basically is going to be constrained by the bubbling pressure to 2 times our bubbling pressure. So if we can figure out what this capillary length is, we're going to have a reasonable approximation of at least one of these water retention parameters. And so there are a number of ways that people have tried to constrain or estimate this capillary length. Probably the most common is you do an infiltration test, infiltration here on the y-axis, time here on the x-axis, you plot out your cumulative infiltration, and then you can linearize this relationship by dividing, for example, both sides by the square root of time. And that gives you a two-term linear model shown here. And that second term, this concept, the intercept of that linear model is going to be proportional to the capillary length. In theory, it works well. In practice, there's a lot of uncertainty. Something like 60% success rate is pretty typical, I would say, if somebody goes out and does a bunch of infiltration tests. Something like 50 to 60% of them are probably going to give you accurate values this way. The other ones are going to give you negative values or non-realistic kind of values. And so we've been playing around a little bit with trying to do some additional instrumentation and try to constrain that capillary length a little bit more accurately. And so I'll show you some data from a couple of tests we've done in some sandy soils. Basically have us our single ring, in this case 7.5 centimeter diameter, basically try to maintain a very low pressure, positive pressure head, about just above zero. And then in this case, measuring water content at various radial distances using a combination of Decagon sensors. These are some Arduino sensors we were playing around with. And then trying to use that information. Been working on an analytical solution. It wasn't quite ready for prime time, so I instead went to inverse modeling via Hydrus and basically set up the same scenario here and let Hydrus try to infer what those water retention and hydraulic conductivity parameters are that best explain it. And so for this first one, was a Bojack sandy loam soil. Doing the inverse model gave us these. So this is in terms of the Van Genuchten Mollem model. This is the parameters for N, alpha, and our saturated hydraulic conductivity. And looking at that model inverse solution compared to what we measured, reasonable fit in terms of this would be the Hydrus model for infiltration. These would be our observed points. The model is probably under-predicting that capillary length and over-predicting the saturated hydraulic conductivity a little bit. But when we add in these water content sensor measurements, we can see that these parameters are probably reasonable in terms of, again, the dots are measured values, the lines are what Hydrus is predicting. And so this parameter combination is capturing the time of arrival of that wetting front at each of these sensors, 2 centimeters, 5 centimeters, 8 centimeters. It's also capturing the rate at which that water content changes, which is related to the soil water diffusivity, There is a little bit of offset with some of the sensors. The 5-centimeter sensor was reading a higher water content than the 2-centimeter, maybe just due to heterogeneity or just differences in the sensor technologies. But overall, it seems like this inverse solution is giving us reasonable fits. And by having these water content sensors there, we're adding an additional piece of information to try to reduce the problem of non-uniqueness in our answers. Did another test on a mixed play sand, basically. Similar thing. In this case, I was able to get the Brooks and Corey inverse model to work. And so eta parameter here, this would be the bubbling pressure, that should be a negative. And then the saturated hydraulic conductivity here. Again, similar story when we talk about infiltration, the hydrous model versus what the observations are saying. Slightly underpredict, but is capturing the general behavior. And in this case, I only had one sensor installed, but again, it's capturing the time of arrival of that wetting front, more or less the shape of that wetting front, underpredicting the high end slightly, but again, seems to be capturing both of these pieces of information well. And so the million-dollar question is, how does this, these inverse modeled parameters compare to what we measured during more conventional methods? And so for the first, the BoJack sample, we have here our pressure head, here our water content. And so the pressure plate system isn't shown here in the orange, what we measured on the using a pressure plate system, versus what we measured with the hydrous inverse model. Overall, fairly close fit between the two of them, and our MSE in terms of water content of less than 3%. A little bit of different, particularly here on the saturated end, but seems like to be reflecting some of the same information. In the mixed sand, in this case, we were able to get that bubbling pressure pretty close between, in this case, we measure with the high prop versus what we measure with the hydrous. A little bit of difference in more of the pore size distribution parameter. But again, an RMSE of less than 5% between what we were getting with this 30-minute infiltration test versus what we got in multiple weeks with these other methods. There are a few challenges and caveats I wanted to talk about quickly that I'm trying to work through. One of them is there's just different time scales when we're talking about water flowing in the vertical direction and the lateral direction, particularly in coarse textured soils. And so it may be that by the time your wetting front gets out to multiple sensors, this bulb is hitting a horizon change or some kind of restrictive layer or something like that, which would complicate things. Right now I've been just focusing on surface measurements, but as we've seen in this session, there's a lot of interest and a lot of interesting data when you start looking at the subsurface. I think there are some ways that you could modify these techniques to do something like a borehole test, but again, I haven't had a chance to work that out yet. Been a lot of talk of wetting versus draining parameters. I think that's something that needs to be examined more closely with something like this. And I think it could be argued, and some people have argued, that because these rapid infiltration processes, at the pore scale, there's these kind of snap-on processes and that cause the wetting fronts to typically be fairly sharp, and so that maybe this actually is more indicative of draining parameters versus wetting parameters, but I think that's something that is worth exploring in more detail. And then I heard several times in previous talks talking about air entrapment. That's certainly a concern here, for better or worse, right? If we're trying to figure out field conditions and in situ water retention, maybe it's better to account for that entrapped air with our measurements. Certainly something to discuss. And so to wrap up, I think, and I'm proposing, that instrumented infiltration tests can be a way to constrain water retention parameters. One of the benefits, well, there's a lot of potential advantages. It can be done really quickly, so we can do a lot of these tests around and start looking at spatial variability, things like that. Can be performed in situ with minimal disturbance. I'd also say that, for instance, if I took the high prop data and tried to predict that infiltration process, it's going to give me a pretty poor fit. So, maybe this is, if the goal is to use water retention parameters to try to predict water movement, maybe something related to water movement is a good way to go. But there are some challenges, like I said, that I'm working through. And so with that, I will wrap up. Thank you.
Thank you.